Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor. And I tell you what, I mean, this one's special because, I mean, Peter King has been a friend for so many years. I still remember when way back when he was in Cincinnati and I was out here in Seattle and we started a notes network that had about 11 people. And we're back old school. We're doing it in a conference call with 11 people. We go for about an hour. Now technology has kind of made that a little obsolete. But, Peter, we go back a long way. And first off, congratulations on the move over to NBC. And, of course, you get the Football Morning in America column now that's going to be out there every Monday and through the week. Congratulations. And kind of explain the move and what you're looking forward to.
Well, John, thank you very much. Yeah, after having done this for so long and after having been at Sports Illustrated for 29 years, and I ended up being lucky enough 5 years ago to have them, give me a website and allow me to hire a staff and work with people. And, you know, there's two things I think that when I knew it was time. Number one, you know, the nine people who I was working with, writers, not all of them exclusively for the MMQB. Some of them we shared with SI. But their average age was 30 years old. As long as I stay there, I'm taking a lot of the stories that they could be doing. That's number one. And number two, the NFL has become this 24/7, 365 thing that, the way I like to live my life is that I like a couple of months every year where I do other things. But it's very hard to do that nowadays if you want to run an NFL website, let's say, and want to be the boss of that. You know, you can't take June off altogether. You can't take half of July off or whatever. And so I just found that it was probably time. I had two brothers who died young, and I'm 61 years old, and I just said, hey, it's probably time to, I'm going to still do the column on Monday and do that with intensity and be as good or better than I ever have been. But I just thought a lot of this other stuff, I just need to draw a line in the sand and probably be good to myself. So that's why I did it.
Well, and that's what people, I think, don't appreciate is that, you always have been big into fantasy baseball, and you always like to take the time during the season to get involved in that. And then once you get past May, you like to get that 5 or 6 weeks where you can enjoy it, because I know particularly the time that when your daughter lived out in the Seattle area, I mean, you'd fly out here, and you just need that time off. I mean, you were doing the things that I never did, which is, of course, I never took the time off, even though I probably could. But I give you credit because, I mean, you were able to compartmentalize that and kind of branch out and, take that time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think, I'm fortunate in that I have the opportunity to do that. And NBC, I'm going to be doing 4 or 5 stories for Football Night in America, the feature stories for Sunday night. I'm going to be working with Florio doing his radio show one day a week during the season. And so I'm going to be plenty busy. I'm just not going to be probably as maniacally busy as I was over the last 5 years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, what kind of concerned me a little bit was that we were sitting in the Hall of Fame room for the 7 to 8 to 9 hours we are on the eve of the Super Bowl. And, you had so many things going on, and, you'd have to get up and kind of walk around a little bit. And I'm sure that was just because, the stress and the pressures and all that stuff of running a 9-person department.
Well, yeah, I mean, at that time of year, a lot of times, yeah, I guess I am sort of a walker during the Hall of Fame meeting. But I'm a walker because I don't want to sit there and nod off, basically. And it has nothing to do with I'm not into the meeting. It's just that, geez, by that time of year, I don't know about you, but, man, I'm kind of bush, especially with how busy you are basically during Super Bowl week. But, yeah, I mean, hey, look, this worked out the best for everybody because now SI gets to have people like Robert Klemko and Jenny Varentis and Albert Breer and Connor Orr do a lot of the things that, some of which they would not have been able to do had I stayed. So I think it's the best thing for everybody.
Well, let's kind of go over 29 years at SI. What are some of the highlights and things that you remember about all that?
Well, when I think back, probably the first thing that really comes to mind is getting on a bus in the East Bay of San Francisco, Oakland, and getting on a bus with John Madden on a Tuesday at noon and riding that bus across I-80 to the Dakota apartment complex in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and just basically living with John Madden for 3 days. That was tremendously fun. And that really, I remember thinking at the end of it, those are the kind of stories I want to do. And so then they went from there to, I convinced Mike Holmgren in 95 to let me be inside the Packers for a week. I did a week in the life of the Green Bay Packers. And then, you know, those are the kind of stories that I learned over time, even more than breaking news with the league, which I've done some of, but not a lot of. Those are the things, the in-depth stories, being in somebody's draft room, you know, which I've done, I think, now 9 times on day one of the draft. You know, spending a week in the life of an officiating crew, which I did with Steratore's crew in 2013. Spending a week with Carson Palmer on how a quarterback's life really works during the season. So those are the kind of things that I'll always remember with the most fondness, because I think that was what I really wanted to do. I wanted to not only you know, write about the game, but I wanted to educate readers, listeners, viewers, experiencers about the people in the game who they didn't know.
And you were able to get into places that nobody's been able to get into before. Like, for example, I think you've done this for a couple years. You get into the scheduling meetings in New York when they're trying to put together the schedule. What's that like? And what's that process about?
Well, I actually, John, get in at the end of it when the day that they're going to announce it, I'll go in there and spend a couple hours with Howard Katz and his crew, Mike North, who's been doing it for 20 years. And you basically figure out that these guys have been doing this for, you know, basically since New Year's Day, or since whatever the day after the regular season ends, when you know exactly all 16 opponents for all 32 teams. So that is the thing that to me is, I just have always loved doing it. I remember a few years ago when there was a papal visit to the United States, and the Pope was going to be in Philadelphia, and the Archbishop of Philadelphia wrote a letter to Roger Goodell imploring him to not schedule the Eagles at home on the day the Pope was going to be speaking there. So that became a problem, because now the Eagles, I forget, they were either 3 of the first 4 on the road, or 4 of the first 5 on the road. I think it was 3 of 4. And so they had to schedule them out of town that day. And so those are the kind of things that I think are fun to do when you can explain how something really works.
And explain how that is, process has advanced, because I know that they have keep on creating computer programs to try to, you know, try to minimize the number of 3-week road trips, which can be very damaging to a team. The kind of the things that they keep on trying to weed out. Again, it's not a perfect system, but still, they do try to do improvements that most people don't know about.
There's a big board in that room that Val Pinchbeck, the late Val Pinchbeck, who used to make the schedule. He basically used to do it by himself, and he used to do it by trial and error. He would line up all of the games that had to be played and just, like, start inventing a schedule. And when he got to a roadblock, he'd fix it, and then he would create other problems and have to fix those. So, but anyway, the way the NFL does it now is that they write computer code and write a program that tells the computer, okay, you know, we don't want, for instance, any team to have a 3-game road trip that ever includes more than one game that's more than 2 time zones away. And And so they do all of these odd little things that tell the computer. And so they spit out schedule after schedule after schedule. I remember a couple of years ago, they were going to play a schedule, and there was only one problem with the schedule. The schedule was perfect, with the exception of one problem, okay, and that is that the Seattle Seahawks would have had a three-game road trip, and the road trip was going to be, I think it was going to be, I'd have to look back on it, but my memory is like, it was going to be at Carolina, at Washington, at San Francisco, or something like that. And they said, this is the only bad part of the schedule, but Seattle will probably just go east, and they'll stay east, and it's okay. And Roger Goodell looked at the schedule, and he goes, no, this violates your rule about time zones. We don't want to do that, blah, blah, blah. So they had to go back to work, and it took them like another day and a half of possibilities. And finally, they got a schedule where Seattle didn't have that three-game road trip anymore. So those are the kind of things that were fun to watch, all those little, all those little X factors that go into making the schedule.
Now, you can explain this probably better to me because, you've been in that room and watched how they do that. So, I mean, people keep on saying, well, what they should do is schedule a bye week for the teams that have Thursday night games and, with London games and overseas games and things of that nature. I mean, how impossible is to accommodate, a bye week?
Well, see, the reason, John, I'm telling you, the reason why I don't think that'll ever happen unless they add a second bye week for every team is very simple. Players do not want to have their bye weeks compromised. So in other words, let's just say for the sake of argument, there's a bye week before every Thursday night game. Well, what that would do for players essentially is they would, let's say they play a game on Sunday and then their bye week is the next week. They go in on Monday, they have their meetings, they watch their film, and the coach says, okay, you guys are gone for the next 5 days or the next 6 days. But if you made the bye week before a Thursday night game, they would come back on Friday. So the players would basically have 3 days off. And the players I've talked to and talking to the league people, the players won't agree to that. If they're going to have a bye week, and again, some coaches are different, but I'd say about half the coaches in the league right now give guys either 6 or 7 days off. And so that is the biggest thing that stands in the way of that.
And plus, one of the problems, because, the league likes to have the first 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, where there's no bye week, bye weeks,
yeah.
And last 5-6 weeks with no bye weeks. And what ends up happening is that, and I know from having, picking games and stuff like that, when you have a bye week and you take 4 to 6 teams out of the mix, it's hard to figure out what games are going to be available for the Sunday afternoon broadcast, because a lot of the good games may be gone.
I think that's the biggest problem with having 2 bye weeks during the season, because you've already got to fill the Thursday night window. Fox has just paid $1 jillion for that, so you got to give them a good game. You got to give NBC a good game on Sunday night, and theoretically, even though everybody knows that ESPN doesn't get a great game on Monday night, you can't give them, Tennessee, Cleveland every week, So I think that becomes the biggest problem. The biggest problem, unless you expand the league, is inventory.
Let's kind of go big picture. How would you describe the state of the NFL right now, the quality of play and where it is?
I think the quality of play is fine. I think it's imaginative. I think it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of really smart people in the game, and they come along. The league kind of births, these new, fresh, great players and great rivalries. I mean, who would have thought 2 years ago that right now, in 2018, the rivalry I think we'd all be looking forward to, well, I shouldn't say we'd all, but the rivalry I'm looking forward to the most over the next 5 years is Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, 49ers, Rams. That, I think, that's one of the things the league does very, very well. It regenerates and gets new stars, new players, new rivalries. But I think on top of that, I think the biggest thing the NFL, the biggest challenge the NFL is going to have has nothing to do with the national anthem. This too shall pass, even though it's an issue. I think the biggest thing is making sure that 20 years from now that there's going to be enough players playing tackle football at a high level to keep the pipeline of good talent coming to the NFL. And I think the NFL needs to continue to invest in research about head trauma, about CTE, about safer helmets, safer football fields. But I think those are, when I think about the league right now, I think that it's very, very cool to see the regeneration of talent rivalries and new stuff you see every year. But, you know, there's storm clouds on the horizon that they got to be careful about.
Oh, no question about it. We know the impact of fantasy football as far as, you know, increasing the interest for fans, particularly the young fans that, you know, need to be kind of groomed. But how do you impact what's going to happen now that legalized gambling is going to be there? Because I would imagine that's going to increase even more interest in this sport and other sports.
Yeah, I think the one place where you're going to see a bit of a change, I don't know this for sure, but, you know, my sort of gut feeling is that the TV ratings are going to increase. This is something that nobody really is talking about, but in all local markets this year, you're going to be allowed, I'm not sure if it's just Verizon or if it's all carriers, you're going to be allowed to watch the game on local games only on your phone. And they're going to try to figure out how many people do that and how to quantify that. As far as ratings go, I think the other part of the game that's going to be interesting is that if you have a meaningless game in December, all of a sudden now, Cleveland-Cincinnati meaningless game on December 12th is going to have some meaning because people can gamble on it. What that will do to ratings, I think it will. It certainly can't hurt the ratings. So my gut feeling is that that'll probably help the ratings. And if it does, I think gambling could not only bring in more money to people in and around the NFL, I think it could also increase the ratings.
No, and that's because I know the Packers have their annual statement, and it came out. And what I do, I always, because I'm such a database geek that I try to break down and try to figure out the future caps and all that stuff. And so you incorporate those numbers, and sure, there was a ratings drop, but there's a ratings drop in all aspects because it's hard to quantify where the ratings are when more people are starting to watch on iPhones and on their tablets and all that stuff. But it's now, this year, looks like it's a $15 billion business, and it still keeps going up a billion two every year.
Yeah. I think it will continue to do that. I doubt Roger Goodell is going to have the $25 billion business that he wanted by whatever 2025, whatever year it was. I don't think he's going to have that, but it'll probably inch up around toward 20. And what does that mean? You know, I don't know, but I do think the NFL is going to more and more make decisions, probably more because of finances than they are because of keeping the game great. That would worry me some.
No doubt. But, of course, the great part is, Peter, congratulations on the move over to NBC, NBC.com. And, of course, we'll be reading you every Monday and, of course, watching you there. Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Really appreciate it, John. Thanks so much. I'll see you down the road.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.